We will call this meeting of the Commerce Committee to order. If we could get, I believe we have a quorum, if we could get somebody to approve the minutes from yesterday's meeting, I would appreciate it. Thank you. Representative Johnson moves the minutes. Any questions? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Minutes are adopted. Thank you, Representative Johnson.
We have copies.
We will get going and start with the agenda right away. First bill up is 1530, our own Representative Mazerall. Representative Mazerall, please proceed whenever you're ready. And I see you have a testifier and handouts. If you guys want to identify yourselves for the record, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We are speaking to House File 1530. And if you would excuse me for just a minute, sir.
If you would like to go ahead and start testifying while we're, if you want to identify yourself for the record and go ahead, we'd appreciate it.
Sure. My name is Ron Blittenthal. I'm Vice President of Government Affairs for Old Republic National Title Insurance Company. And you want me just to start?
Sure. Representative Mazerall, now they're back. If you want to give us a brief synopsis of why you're here and why we're here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am bringing forward House File 1530 and moving that this be recommended to pass and go to refer to the General Register. Mr. Chair and members, House File 1530 is a bill that deals with the financial reserves required for insurance companies that issue title insurance. Its intent is to reduce the percentage of premiums that title insurance companies are required to set aside as a financial reserve to cover possible future claims. And this bill would put Minnesota in line with the requirements of other states in this area.
Thank you, Representative Mazerall. Mr. Blumenthal, if you want to go ahead and fill us in, we'd appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Currently, Old Republic National Title Insurance Company is the only title insurance company domiciled in the state of Minnesota. And there are other title insurance companies in the country, but they're domiciled in different states. And the statutory premium reserves that title insurers are supposed to maintain are based on the statutes in the state of domicile. So as a Minnesota corporation, we have to maintain our reserves according to what Minnesota requires. Currently, the statute calls for us to set aside 8% of our premiums and other income as statutory premium reserve. We went to the Department of Commerce because we noticed that we were grossly over-reserved. We're about 50% over-reserved according to what the actuaries say that we need. And the Department of Commerce did a study, and it showed that the other states of domicile for the other national title insurers around the country, they average between 5.2% and 6.3% for their statutes. So we're actually asking that the statute, the amount that's set aside, be reduced from 8% to 6.5%, which would still be higher than what all the other title insurance companies have to maintain around the country, but it would level the playing field for us. We're currently at a disadvantage competitively because the higher reserves reduce our income, make us less attractive as an investment. And in addition to that, when our reserves are higher, that lowers what's called the surplus of the company, and that lowers the amount of risks that we're able to insure in other states around the country that require a higher surplus. So by reducing the statutory premium reserve, which would be a 20-year process, because once the money's in the reserve, it goes away over 20 years into our income. So it's a very gradual process to go down from 8 to 6.5, but it would gradually increase our surplus so that we'd be able to compete more with the other companies and be more attractive as an investment.
Thank you, sir. Members, any questions? Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this time I'm with you. Okay. I'm not happy with some things that Old Republic snuck by in the past that gave them a competitive advantage against the other title insurance companies, but I certainly want to try and keep them on an even basis. I'm not against local, but the others have a lot of employees also in the state. So basically,
feel lonely?
You're saying that if you don't have this, you don't have enough money to or surplus to write in other states as much to compete with them in other states and things like that?
Well, Mr. Blitenthal.
Yes, Mr. Chairman and Representative Mueller, what I'm saying is that in most states there's a formula that tells you how much of a risk you can insure, and the formula is usually based on a percentage of your surplus. And because we have a much higher statutory premium reserve than the other companies, we have a lower surplus. As the reserve goes up, the surplus goes down. So in some states, there are risks that we cannot write because our surplus isn't high enough. But if our reserve would be lower so that it would be competitive with the other company's reserves, then we'd be able to write higher risks as well.
Representative Mullery, does that answer your question?
I think so. Are you the chief attorney now there? I can't keep track.
No, I'm in charge of government affairs for the company.
Oh, okay.
Other questions, members?
I don't have any.
Right. Thank you, Representative Mullery. Any other questions? Seeing none, Representative Mazerall, do you have anybody else that wants to testify? Or is there anyone else in the audience that wants to speak for or against this bill? Representative Dietrich, are you coming down to speak? Good bill. Just vote yes.
Would you explain
it? With that, Representative Mazerall, if you want to renew your motion that House File 1530 be approved, and where are we sending this? Is this going to the floor?
I believe this is going to the General Register, Mr. Chair.
With that, Representative Mazerall renews his motion that House File 1530 be passed and sent to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
And thank you, Representative Mazerall. Up next, Representative Mazerall.
Mr. Chairman, if I
Representative
can, just privilege of the committee, I think is why I'm rising.
Absolutely.
It's called privilege of the House, I guess, on the floor. But
we always like to one-up the whole body.
That's right. I passed out to the chair and the committee administrator, and the pages are passing out. We just got a fiscal note regarding the prevailing wage bill, House File 1476, that was passed yesterday. And as Representative Sanders so eloquently said, there was a whole bunch that we still didn't know. I just ask that a member who voted in favor of the bill make the motion to reconsider it and bring it back to the committee. So if a member of the 10 to 9 majority, Mr. Chairman?
I think it was 11 to 10.
11-10. If one of the 11 would please make the motion to reconsider, I'd appreciate it.
Well, Representative Atkins, before we do that, has Representative Scott seen the fiscal note?
I assume it went directly to her.
Well,
she's the chief author.
What we will do is I will personally make sure that she gets a copy of this when we head to the floor in an hour and a half or so. And I don't think that we should recall the bill, especially given the lateness of the date during session. And we should make sure she's got it before they are going to hear the bill in Ways and Means. I think that's an appropriate place to hear a fiscal note about the bill.
Mr. Chairman, on that point, before when we sent it to Ways and Means, I think it doesn't it have to go to the appropriate Finance Committee, which I think would be Jobs. Now that it has a fiscal note. It, by the way, it didn't indicate that it would save the state any money. It said that it would cost the state $101,000. So it's got to go to Jobs, isn't that right?
Well, Representative Atkins and Representative Mullery wants to weigh in this, but we'll send the fiscal note to Representative Scott. I have two copies. I will also make sure that Representative Holberg gets one today. And if the protocol demands it, then they can the author and the Representative Holberg can decide to send that to the Jobs Committee.
Would you support the motion, Mr. Chair?
I would leave that entirely up to them. I think we did our job and had a full and fair hearing yesterday, and if they wanted to send it to the Jobs Committee, they can. The author can certainly do that. You're certainly willing to, or you're certainly able to make that recommendation on the floor, but I would just leave it in their hands.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Mullery.
Mr. Chair, I did ask the chief of the fiscal staff head, and he indicated under 4.1 that if Ways and Means asked for it, then it should have gone to a fiscal committee first before going there.
Well, I will make sure that Representative Holberg and Representative Scott both know that when I give them these this afternoon. With that, Representative Mazerall, House File 730, if you'd like to go ahead and move your bill, and we will proceed.
Mr. Chair, members, I move House File 730, recommended to pass, and referred to the General Register. House File 730 is a bill that is references our no-fault law. It's for those owners who drive their vehicles without auto insurance. There's a Financial Responsibility Act requiring that auto owners maintain insurance for the privilege of owning and drive operating a car in the state of Minnesota. For those owners who are breaking the law by driving without auto insurance, this bill would prevent them from collecting non-economic damages. However, they would still be able to collect economic detriment or loss defined by statutes Chapter 65B, which includes all types of loss that can be quantified factually, including medical expense, income loss, replacement services loss, funeral expenses, survivor's economic loss, and survivor's replacement services loss. The bill is intended to create an incentive for drivers to obey the law by maintaining compulsory auto insurance for that privilege of driving. For disobeying the law, the uninsured, as an owner, would not be able to collect non-economic damages. There is an exception in this bill in paragraph F, and that is for those drivers who are uninsured but are injured as a result of the driving of another driver, another motorist who is impaired. A number of states have enacted laws similar to this. Section 2 of this bill increases the penalty for driving without auto insurance from $200 to $600 as a minimum. And I have with me Bob Johnson as a witness, Mr. Chair.
Welcome, Mr. Johnson. If you could identify yourself for the record, please proceed.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, Bob Johnson, Insurance Federation of Minnesota. It's a trade association of insurance companies here that write a majority of the private passenger automobile sold in the state of Minnesota. We're here to support House File 730, encourage the committee to vote for it. As Representative Mazerall has indicated, first the problem. The problem in Minnesota is a growing number of people driving without car insurance. That's a crime. And it is, the number is probably somewhere between 15% and 20%. It's an estimate, but that's at least 500,000 cars in Minnesota that are on the road without insurance. One of the problems of that is that it creates an unfairness and an inequity and a cost shifting to the drivers that are buying the required coverage, because one of the required coverages is an uninsured motorist claim. And so from our industry's perspective, we believe it is important to look at what are the tools and the steps that we can do as a state to help encourage people to put incentives in place to deal with the growing problem of uninsured motorists in this state. It is inequitable. Again, it shifts costs. We believe that House File 730 is one part of it. It's not the only part of it, but it's one part of a solution and a response to do a targeted penalty to individuals who are breaking the law and driving without car insurance. In a subsequent lawsuit, if one is filed for personal injuries, then that individual who is driving without insurance would be under the provisions of House File 730 would not be able to collect in that subsequent suit for their pain and suffering damages. If you comply with the compulsory auto insurance law, this bill has no effect on you. If you don't comply, then there is this targeted penalty. This is not new or unique to Minnesota, as Representative Mazerall commented. Eight states today have this on their laws. I can tell you it's being debated in this legislative cycle in 20 states right now. I don't know how many will pass it, but I just, for the committee's purposes, to know that this is an issue, that the problem of uninsured drivers is not unique to Minnesota. In the economic times that we're in, unfortunately, that increases the number of uninsured drivers. There are credible studies that show that for every 1% increase in unemployment, it is close to a one-to-one correlation in terms of the 1% increase in uninsured drivers. So just some background in terms of why are we here today and why do we think that this is a reasonable proposal. So it's being debated in as 20 states. You see a range of states, California, New Jersey, New York, Iowa, Louisiana, Oregon, Colorado, have this on the books today. And some of these other states, California and New Jersey, are tougher laws in terms of the penalty, if you will, on the person driving without insurance. So from our perspective, we believe it's reasonable. We don't believe there's any constitutional questions with this. There have been a couple of states where this has been litigated to their Supreme Courts. Their laws were different, but the point is that I think the same potential constitutional question. I am not a constitutional lawyer. I've talked to some lawyers who have looked at this. We don't believe that there's legitimate challenges or problems under either the due process or the equal protection clauses of the Minnesota or the United States Constitution. So, and the last part of the bill, Mr. Chairman and committee members, again, as Representative Mazerall described, the current dollar penalty for driving without insurance, we believe, needs to be closer to what's the cost of 6 months of coverage to, frankly, put the right incentive in place. So the current law has a $200 dollar amount in it, and we're suggesting that we put it at $600. We believe that, A, that's a better number to have the intended effect to encourage those individuals that have the resources to buy the required coverage, if they're weighing it or looking at that, to give them the right incentive to buy the coverage. So those are the provisions of the bill, Mr. Chairman. We urge the committee to support this. We think this is a reasonable. It's not the only response, and there are other bills on the agenda that I would suggest deal with some other aspects of the no-fault system in Minnesota. The affordability of coverage, that's another issue that needs to be dealt with and other parts of the law. But for purposes of a measured response that has Minnesota take some steps to deal with the problem and, frankly, help the majority of citizens and drivers who are buying the required coverage, we think this is a fair and a reasonable response. So conclude with that, Mr. Chairman, and be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Representative Van Zels has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Johnson, is there any evidence? I mean, we're referencing a lot of activity in other states, and I grow increasingly wary about using other states as an example of doing something differently than Minnesota, so therefore Minnesota should not be an island and not be different, but should join the maddening crowd and be like other states. I grow weary of that. Having said that, is there any evidence to support your claim that raising the penalty on poor people who do not carry insurance will actually result in a motivation or a drive to, in fact, purchase insurance from one of your carriers?
Mr. Johnson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman and members, yes, we believe there's evidence that shows it's not targeted to any group of individuals. It's just the penalty under the law for not buying the compulsory coverage that states with higher dollar penalties that we believe is demonstrated to have an effect to encourage or have more people buy the required coverage. The state mandates it, and so with the current low dollar penalty, and it is a low dollar penalty compared to the cost of 6 months of coverage, I think the answer to your question is yes, we believe there are states that we can, I don't have the literature here, but I can follow back up with states with higher dollar penalties have better compliance with their required compulsory auto insurance.
Representative Anzos.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for the answer, but the answer really is not sufficient. I asked for evidence that there is a direct correlation, cause and effect. You raise the penalty, and people will comply with the requirement of having insurance. Do you have any data, any empirical evidence that can give me some comfort?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't have Mr. Johnson. It at the podium here with me, but I can follow up to you and the committee members with examples of other states with higher dollar fines for their citizens not complying with those states' compulsory auto insurance requirements.
Representative Anzos.
Well, members, I think you just heard that the testifier does not have the information. I find it inconceivable and preposterous that he can make the claim without the information. So I would hope committee members would dismiss this as just being a claim that is unfounded in actual data and behavior.
Representative Johnson.
I'll pass, Mr. Chair.
Representative Atkins.
Do you have anybody else?
Representative Mullery.
I'll pass for now.
Thank you. Mr. Chair. I'll pass for now, but I want to point out one thing that this one does change the penalties for a crime, so it should go to public safety.
I believe that's where it's scheduled to go on right now.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I'm ready again.
Representative Atkins.
I was just writing a note. Representative Mazurell, a couple of scenarios I wanted to run by you to make sure that I understand the bill. Just for the sake of discussion, so we're talking about somebody, there's a woman named Millie, not her real name, but Millie, elderly grandma, gets a little confused, still has her license, so, and didn't pay her insurance. She's sitting at a stop sign, gets rear-ended, totals her car, she actually lost her right arm. I don't remember exactly what it was, but it was $25,000 in medical bills. That would be covered under this, right?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Mazurell.
Representative Atkins, that's correct.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Mazurell. And then she's retired, so she doesn't have any wage loss. What would she get, though, for the loss of her arm from the driver that... It's just... it was a teenage kid. I think he was... might have been under the influence. Anyway, regardless of that, what would she get for the loss of her arm under your bill?
Representative Mazurell.
Mr. Chair, Representative Atkins, she would receive economic damages, which I think is, as you've described, it would pretty much be the $25,000 if she's got no other source of income where she's losing, lost time at work or anything like that. If the other driver were impaired, it does come under the exception under F that would allow her to recover for non-economic pain and suffering. Under this bill, though, she would not be entitled to the pain and suffering damages if she were not insured.
Representative Atkins.
Thank you. I must have misunderstood the bill. So the doctors will get paid their treatment costs. But Millie loses her arm, and she gets. I thought Mr. Johnson said. Mr. Johnson, maybe the question's for Mr. Johnson. What's the cost of 6 months of insurance for somebody like Millie? She had an older car. It's probably a mid-90s. She drove it to church on Sundays. That kind of stuff.
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Atkins, it's probably $400 to $500.
Yeah,
Representative Atkins.
Something.
Thank
like
you, Mr.
That.
Chair, and Representative Mazurell. Then. So the punishment to Millie is supposed to be, I think Mr. Johnson said, like $400 or $500, right, Representative Anderson, in that what Representative or Mr. Johnson said. But the so that's the value that you place on the loss of Millie's arm?
Representative Mazzarol.
Mr. Chair, Representative Atkins, no, I certainly don't place that value on her arm. However, under this bill, the idea is that people, for the privilege of driving in Minnesota, we all pay for insurance, which covers ourselves and others in the case of an accident. If a person is not taking that responsibility, but taking advantage of the privilege, then they're foreclosed from the non-economic damages under this bill, still receiving actual out-of-cost, out-of-pocket expense.
And I'm not done yet, Mr. Chair. I'm dumbfounded. The Mr. Johnson said it's supposed to, you know, be some kind of penalty for not having insurance, and I get that. If I, you know, if I'm just poor and I didn't pay, or if I'm a bad person and chose not to buy insurance. But Millie's like 72. She just plain got confused on her bills. That can't possibly be the intention of your... Maybe we could make an exception. With Mr. Pender's help, we could draft an amendment for anybody named Millie who's 72 or 73, 74, something in that range. I talked about a bad bill last night, but this is right up there. This is Letterman would put this in the top 10, I think, Representative Mazzarol. So let me try a different one. There was some young folks that were intentionally struck the other day. They were walking home, actually, but let's assume that they were in a car. You know, at the University of Minnesota over there, and this Mr. Bakrash, the police contend anyway, that he intentionally struck them, killing one of them. Now, those folks, if they were in a car, okay, let's say that they're uninsured, though, but they were intentionally struck, they'd have an ability, or their families, right, would have an ability to get something more than just the funeral expense paid. They don't get anything for the loss of that person? Those injured people, regardless, even the person that died, but let's not even talk about him. Let's talk about those people that were hurt. If one of them was driving, but they were intentionally hit, you'd protect that criminal under this bill? Or am I reading it wrong, maybe?
Mr. Johnson.
Well, Mr. Chairman. That was to Representative Mazzarol, as chairman.
Oh, Representative Mazzarol.
Mr. Chair, Representative Atkins, you certainly raised some very difficult situations. The idea of this bill is to assure that we don't have 20% of our drivers on the roads who are uninsured, putting the cost on others and taking advantage of a privilege without taking responsibility for what we all agree to in order to take advantage of that privilege. That's what the bill is aimed at. I would like to defer to Mr. Johnson. He apparently has an answer.
And that'd be fine. I'd like to just make a point on, I know where your bill is aimed, Mr. Chair and Representative Mazzarol, but you're shooting buckshot and you're spraying it all over the place at people like Millie and at kids that get hit intentionally by somebody. Have some focus, for heaven's sakes. If you're really trying to go after those people that intentionally failed to pay, but for goodness sakes, you got to have a heart. You know, these are people, you get an elderly lady who's confused and loses an arm, shouldn't have a punishment like that. And then what I'd suggest is we just hold the bill for a little while here. If Mr. Pender is phenomenal, as are the staff here, give him a chance to draft some appropriate amendments so that you're not targeting with buckshot what you should be aiming at more precisely. Would you agree with that, Representative Mazzarol?
Let's see how the conversation, Mr. Chair, Representative Atkins, let's see how the conversation goes.
Thank you.
Mr. Johnson, did you want to reply to that?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't know if there was a question in that. I think there's some responses to the general.
Oh, I got several more questions.
I figured I'm coming so I can be patient. I think, Mr. Chairman and committee members, I think the point is that the public policy issue is that what are we going to do in this state to deal with people driving without insurance, which is a crime. That is a crime. To date, we have limited tools, including enforcement by the state, which is limited under our laws. We don't have much. for an insurance verification system in this state? Virtually nothing. I know the chairman has a bill that because of budget constraints we're not likely to get at. But the point is this, is that there is a cost to the citizens of the state who buy the coverage which is required, and it shifts to them by the drivers that don't do it. I don't know that we're going to ever be able to distinguish the intention of the people, whether it's a mistake. Frankly, as to the mistake issue, our Minnesota laws currently give consumers protections, advance notice. You don't just cancel a policy and snap your fingers. State law requires advance notice. And so consumers, unless they're not getting any of that required advance disclosures prior to cancellations for non-payment, there are protections built in for that. So to the extent people don't respond, and they surely may not, but we also have many drivers that deliberately don't buy the coverage, or they'll buy a policy, they'll drop the coverage, and this is not unique to Minnesota. So what do we do as a state? We think the financial penalty, the criminal penalty, if you will, is one. And as I indicated, this is one piece. It's not the only piece to deal with the growing problem in Minnesota of uninsured drivers. I find that those individuals that comply with the mandate get frustrated with knowing that there are people on the road that don't carry the coverage because it shifts cost to them. And so, Mr. Chairman, I think that there are equity issues that you can look at and say, well, I think the equities fall against imposing this, but the last thing is that here's the point. You buy the required coverage, the bill has no impact on it. And the majority of citizens in the state, drivers, buy the required coverage, and this bill has no impact on them, whatever their economic status. And so we think it's a targeted, measured response. And again, I'm not using other states to say we should copy them, but we often do look at other states just to see what are other states doing. All 50 states have compulsory auto insurance laws. So everybody is trying to deal with the issue. How do we get the citizens, drivers, to buy the required coverage? And we're losing ground on that. So, Mr. Chairman, I think that's the...
Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This may be for Mr. Pender. We have Millie in her car driving to church on Sunday with no car insurance. Her car gets rear-ended, and she has no insurance. Now, normally, regardless of who is at fault, you'd go to your own policy. She doesn't have a policy. Then her recourse would be the person that's at fault would be the car that rear-ended Millie. And so you go to your bodily injury coverage on the person that rear-ended them. But let's say Millie she's going to church on Sunday, she's 72, she goes in the ditch and hits a culvert, no other cars involved, she has no insurance, she'd have no recovery as far as any medical expenses off the PIP, would she?
Mr. Pender.
Mr. Chair, Representative Davids, no. There'd be no insurance to get those benefits from.
But Mr. Chairman, Mr. Pender, in the first scenario where she's driving church on Sunday, she's at the stoplight, her car's rear-ended. Normally, if she had insurance, even though it's not her fault, she'd pick up the medical on her policy. She would still have the recourse under the Masrow bill to collect on the bodily injury coverage on the person who was at fault.
Mr. Pender.
Mr. Chair, Representative Davids, yes.
Okay.
As long as there's another car involved in the accident one way or another.
And Mr. Chairman, Mr. Pender, that would not affect, Representative Masrow's bill would not affect that scenario.
Mr. Pender.
Mr. Chair, Representative Davids, no, it wouldn't.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Slocum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When I went in to renew my license tabs, it used to be a number of years ago that you would put down your policy number and the company that your policy was with, and then you got your tabs if you didn't have proof of insurance. And I know where I re-upped my tabs, they asked to see. If the purpose is, and now we don't do that, and my understanding, I believe, is that the department or something didn't want to do it anymore. or I'm not sure why that was disqualified, or why we're not doing that, because if the purpose is to have people buy insurance as they're supposed to do, I would think that would be more effective, to have people not be able to get their license tabs if they don't have insurance. That would be a more direct route, and then we wouldn't have to worry about poor Millie, and Millie's having a rough day.
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chairman, just briefly, because I'm familiar with the history of that, and we did have what you're describing is called a self-certification system. We had it for years. Everyone at renewal time filled it out, and the Department of Public Safety had a no-fault compliance unit that randomly checked 10% of all of those they communicated back and forth with the auto insurers. There is no unit that does that anymore, so we don't have any mechanism within the agency or system like that to do any monitoring of the compulsory auto insurance. If somebody gets stopped and ticketed by a police officer for a non-compliance, then there'll be some check between the court and the individual on that group, but we don't have any kind of macro overall system in place to do a verification. And so, as I indicated, there's legislation that won't be moving in the 2011 session that's been introduced in the House and the Senate that deals with that particular issue of a verification system, but it takes dollars, and there has to be an upgrading of the systems within the Department of Public Safety, and I think they might have even done a fiscal note on what it would take, what it would cost them to do that and how long it would take. In fact, I'm pretty sure that they've done that even yet this session.
Representative Slocum.
May I follow up? Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I realize that Richfield is where I live, is a superior small city. And my city clerk used to check. I mean, the staff at the desk, you bring in your policy thing, your little receipt thing or whatever it is it was. I don't even remember what it was, but you brought that in. They looked at it. The check was kind of right there at the counter. It was very immediate. And if you didn't have something that looked real legit, it wasn't gone. And then you didn't get your tabs. And then you're driving without tabs. It was very clear. It was very distinct. It was very immediate. Is this an example of eliminating this clear, direct, distinct way of doing things? Is this an example of reform?
Mr. Johnson.
Well, Mr. Chairman, there are a number of aspects to the uninsured motorist issue. A state compliance system is one. We should have something. But in addition, even with state compliance systems, depending on the penalties and the enforcement and how the courts treat them, those may or may not be effective. So we believe that's part of it. But from our perspective, again, we think this is similarly, can and should be a part of the landscape to deal with the uninsured motorist. The affordability question is another important one. There's nothing, this bill doesn't deal with that. But dealing with the affordability of auto insurance also is an important part of this to help, because there are individuals that don't buy it because they don't have the resources. And so that, I'm just saying, I'm acknowledging and we agree that's an issue. But that's another debate that we have to have. It's, in my opinion, it's on the list, but it's separate from this issue.
Representative Slocum.
Mr. Chair, well, the debate's kind of now. If you fine them then $600, that could have gone to their insurance.
Well,
if they can't Mr. afford to buy insurance, that's $600. Fee, bill, whatever you want to call it, isn't going to get them to the insurance carrier any faster. In fact, probably slower.
I think, Mr. Chairman, when you look at the pool of uninsured drivers, and there's studies out there that do this, who are these individuals within any given state? And it's true in every state. There is a group that's working poor, however you want to characterize, people whose economic resources is a challenge to pay for the coverage, and I think remember that these penalties are going to be in the hands of the court, and I think courts have some ability to look at the circumstances in terms of applying penalties. There are a group of drivers who fully have the economic resources and choose to not buy the coverage, and so it is a challenge to tailor. I don't know if you can tailor it to the populations, but But the point is that we want to take steps to increase the number of people who are complying with our compulsory auto insurance laws, and we know we're losing ground. And so I think it's there's a multiple prong approach. We think this is appropriately part of it. It's not the only one. And so we're supporting other bills and working towards issues dealing with affordability. That clearly is an issue that's relevant to those individuals that don't have the means. And so, you know, does having a cheaper priced auto insurance policy help that group? Well, there are studies that make it pretty clear. If you decrease the price of auto insurance, more people will buy it. It maybe it makes some sense, but I'm just indicating that we know there's some evidence out there that shows that if you decrease the price, well, then you have to amend your law in all likelihood if you're going to try to decrease the price, because we've got mandated coverages in our state, and many states do. So that's a part of it, and that's another bill that we're supporting that deals with the affordability issue.
Representative Slocum.
Mr. Chair, my last comment. I'm sorry, this, I think, shoots also. If the intent is to get people insured, as they should be, the unintended consequences in this bill are many. And it's Millie who's probably going to get it. And she's gotten some examples today, and the kids on the sidewalk, that if they would have been driving. And that was in the paper. The unintended consequences are too steep in this one. Sorry.
Representative Dowd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's my understanding, maybe Mr. Pender can help me with this, that it's against the law in the state of Minnesota to drive without automobile insurance.
Mr. Pender.
Mr. Chair and members, that's correct.
Representative Dowd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Slocum, you're not advocating that people should be driving without insurance, are you?
Representative Slocum.
Mr. Chair, I'm so nice. You know that I'll answer this with pleasure. Absolutely not. What I'm saying is that if you put a fee on, or a fine that's $600, and he just said that, you know, for $500, Millie could have gotten insured, it's not going to help Millie get insured. And I think the unintended consequences are awfully steep in this. I don't like this bill.
Members, we do have an amendment. Representative Atkins.
Well, then, Mr. Chair, I'll hold on the amendment. I want to make sure we've heard from all the testifiers, too. When I don't know that we've had anybody other than Mr. Johnson, which is doing a good job. But there might be others as well.
Representative Mazerall, do you have anybody else that wants to testify?
Mr. Chair, I have no other testifiers.
Is there anyone in the audience that wants to testify for or against the bill? Mr. Carlson, welcome, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Joel Carlson. I own a legal research and government affairs business in St. Paul, and I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Association for Justice. And I want you to know we're not here to defend people who don't have insurance, and we're not here to defend impaired drivers. And we absolutely support efforts that would encourage people to purchase insurance. However, I want you to know that the legislation before you raises serious concerns for us as to whether or not it would actually encourage anyone to buy insurance, number one, and what benefit it would be to insure drivers. This is called the Fairness for Responsible Drivers Act. What benefit is there for responsible drivers? There's no premium reduction. They get nothing from it. I mean, this has nothing to do with responsible drivers, and there's no benefit to them. There are several and serious judiciary-related issues to the bill. This would be the first time that the state legislature would shift responsibility for accidents away from the at-fault driver onto an unrelated issue, whether or not they had insurance. And it is that shifting of responsibility away from at-fault parties that has led not only us, but the Minnesota Defense Lawyers Association to oppose this legislation. And I have a letter from the MDLA, and we don't always gang up on bills together, but I want you to know that what they said is that their objections is that this bill arbitrarily and artificially reduces non-economic damages for a plaintiff unrelated to the faults of the party involved in the accident. And that is a significant problem and a significant change in the law for Minnesota. And we also believe this is constitutionally infirm because it denies an injured party their right to redress under the Constitution. And it also treats different classes of people differently, and I think it has equal protection issues as well. Mr. Chairman, some states have adopted this no pay, no play, none in the form that is before you in House File 770. But I want you to know, and Representative Anzels, I want you to know that I'm not able to find 20 states that are looking at this. There are three: Oklahoma, Montana, and Minnesota. Montana, on a very divided one vote or two vote margin, passed this bill, and it was vetoed about a week and a half ago by their Governor Schweitzer. Those are the only states that I'm aware of. Of the eight states that do have it, I want you to know, with the exception of North Dakota, I spent a lot of time there, there's not a lot to run into. Every state that has no pay, no play has a higher rate of uninsured than Minnesota. California is the highest, one of the states that is cited as an example of where this nirvana would lead us to. California, not only do they have higher auto insurance premiums than us, they have a rate of uninsured of over 18%. That's according to the Insurance Factbook for 2010, a document Mr. Johnson referred us to, and it's been a handy guide indeed. Minnesota, I want you to know, has the 28th lowest auto insurance premiums in the country. While the problem of uninsured is certainly an issue that needs to be addressed, we opposed the effort in 2003 to repeal the requirement that drivers demonstrate their proof of financial responsibility when obtaining their license tabs. We oppose that effort, and we encourage efforts to go to some other form of verification, whether it's electronic or on paper. But this bill is just certainly has serious unintended consequences for those who do not have economic losses in an automobile accident, who for whatever reason may be driving without insurance. The premium forgot to be paid. This could happen to me. I found out on Saturday that my security had been breached on my checking account. And that is through my checking account, like many of you, that is where my insurance premium is monthly deducted. They had to close my account. They had to restart everything over. All my automatic payments had to be changed. Now, if I happen to be in that window where my insurance company could not automatically deduct my insurance payment out of my account through no fault of my own, and I am severely injured by a drunk driver through no fault of my own, this bill says in that circumstance I am not entitled to the damages that that negligent driver has caused me, even if they have insurance to pay for the loss. How fair can that be? To the bill, Mr. Chairman and members, you need to know that on lines 2.9 through 2.12, this absolutely gets at Millie. This addresses her physical impairment, her disfigurement, and other non-money losses that she would sustain as a result of being injured by through someone else's fault. And you need to know that non-economic damages are in many cases the only damages that people may sustain, whether they don't work, whether they're young and they're not employed. That may be the only damages that they have. And we also find that, well, we don't want to support impaired drivers on lines 2.23 to 2.27, saying that that it's a get out of jail free card if the at-fault driver was impaired when they ran into you. I would submit that we are now choosing which type of illegal conduct we find more offensive than others. And if I'm sufficiently pitiful enough to be injured by a drunk driver, I can obtain these benefits. But if someone is distracted, someone is texting, someone is doing something else, they're putting on their makeup, I comb my hair a lot while I'm driving, you know, I'm not into but all distracted driving, which is illegal. But if I'm injured by someone that is doing that activity, but they're not impaired, I'm not entitled to benefits, even though I had no fault at the accident. This bill, Mr. Chairman, has been around for a number of years. We've testified against it many times, and it has serious problems, unintended problems, and does nothing, not one thing, to address the issue of uninsured.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Representative Sanders.
Actually, Mr. Chair, I think I have the floor, don't I? I just deferred to have whoever was left to testify, but I... Is that right?
Well, I thought you wanted to wait until we heard all the other testifiers to do your amendment. And if you
I just wanted to make sure we had an opportunity. But you had called on me, and
Go ahead, Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First, I have a question, then I have an amendment that Mr. Pender helped me with. Representative Mazurall, how much of my premium is going to go down when this passes?
Representative Mazurall.
Mr. Chair, Representative Atkins, I don't know.
Representative Atkins.
Well, that wasn't the answer I was expecting. So we don't even know. We're going to, Millie, who's lost her arm and can't recover, and the insurance doesn't have to pay, we don't even know if that's going to save us any money. So unintentional, confused people. I'll go to the amendment. Mr. Chairman, the amendment would be to page 2, after line 27. And it would insert a section G that says, and it's only about 10 words, it would say paragraph D applies only to individuals who intentionally fail to pay their auto insurance premiums. And I'll read it again because I know it's easier to write when we say it twice. So it would be section G, and it'll read paragraph D applies only to individuals who intentionally fail to pay their auto insurance premiums. And I will be very brief on it if Representative Mazurall says that's a friendly amendment. That gets at the sort of situation I described for people like Millie. And if Representative Mazurall likes that, then I won't talk for a long time.
Representative Mazurall,
isn't it? But
Mr. Chair, Representative Atkins, I love hearing you talk. So
you're one of the few.
I'd like to hear it.
You like it?
I'd like to hear you speak to it. I'm not saying it's a friendly amendment.
Okay. Well, I think the situation I described, folks, we all know people like Millie who could just as easily be our moms or our sisters or our aunts. And it's not just women. Guys are more confused than women oftentimes. But that sort of situation we at least ought to have. If you're going to have that kind of penalty, then it ought to be at least be able to show that she intentionally, you know, that it was an intentional act where she deliberately refused to pay. Those are the people we're really after. That's what you said earlier. That's your aim, Representative Mazurall, is the people who just, they know they're supposed to pay and they don't. And if you can demonstrate that, then your bill ought to be, it's a little bit more focused. But we shouldn't be punishing folks that out of confusion or something that went wrong. That's what the amendment does, and I'd appreciate the support for it.
Representative Sanders, did you have a question to this point? Or?
Okay.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Atkins, you know, we hear lots of interesting stories come out of you. I didn't know you were a fan of Johnny Carson and that we're doing Karnak now and trying to figure out the intent of people of whether they truly intended to pay for their insurance or didn't. I think that we're going down a slippery slope if we're going to try and predict whether or not an individual truly, honestly, was going to pay for their insurance.
Okay.
You know, you can have the 20-year-old that says, I don't want to pay for this, what do I need insurance for, to somebody down the block that says, no, I want to pay for my new furniture or something else. So, you know, I think whether it may be outlined in statute, I think that puts a higher burden of proof. All we're doing here today is we're asking for people to abide by the law, what we have in law right now. And you're saying, no, we don't want to abide by the law. These people can get off scot-free. Meanwhile, the neighbors down the street have to pay for the bill. So I guess I'm going to recommend that people vote against your amendment and to vote for the bill overall.
Representative Atkins.
You don't think I want people to abide by the law? Is that really what you're saying? Really? I mean that as a serious question. Is that really what you think I just described a poor woman that got confused.
Help me out here, Mr. Atkins, Representative Atkins.
To ignore the law, Representative Anderson? Well, Is that what you think I'm saying?
What else are you
suggesting? Atkins, hang on. Representative Anderson.
Representative Atkins, what else are you saying? There's no other reason that you could say that you say it's okay. If you don't want to abide by Minnesota law, that's okay, you're saying.
Representative
Mazerall is trying to do here today with this bill is to say, if you don't abide by the law, there's a consequence for it.
Representative Atkins.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, I can show you a whole section, book after book. These weren't Atkins. I have only been here about 8-9 years. But these are folks that have been here since like 1858 that have been passing these laws. And we can go through them if you'd like one by one, that require an intent in order to commit a crime. That's all I'm asking. I'm not telling people to commit a crime. I don't think it's good to drive around without insurance. I've had this very discussion with my children. But if somebody unintentionally does it and they have horrible consequences of it that go well beyond what Mr. Johnson said the purpose of the bill was, you think an arm is worth $500? That's what he said. It should punish the amount that the premium that should have been paid. So I don't appreciate, I understand you're being rhetorical, but I don't appreciate your questioning my motives about the intent that I want people to commit crimes. All I'm saying is, for heaven's sakes, make this thing a little more focused. I don't think Representative Mazerall came here today trying to punish 72-year-old ladies who get rear-ended and lose an arm. I think he said he didn't. That's what the amendment is for, Representative Anderson.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Atkins, well, your actions speak differently. What you have said today is that you don't want to hold people accountable who fail to abide by the law. And what Representative Mazerall is trying to do here today with the piece of legislation that he has before us is to say that if you don't abide the law, there is a consequence to that. And I think that's an important piece that we have here today, and I encourage members to support the bill.
Mr. Chair.
Representative
Ernst, can you please describe for me those actions that I was putting off that demonstrated I want people to commit a crime? I mean, was it sort of a gesture or something? What did I do or say that said I wanted people to commit crimes?
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Atkins, repeatedly throughout this hearing, you have said if somebody fails to not pay for their insurance, and you know that in the state of Minnesota there is a law that says that you have to carry insurance if you're going to drive an automobile, and you're saying that's okay, that they can drive without insurance in the state of Minnesota, and that violates state law. You're very aware. I'm not done.
Okay.
You're very much aware of that law. You're a lawyer. You've studied that. You understand that piece of it. And what Representative Mazerall is saying here today, that if you violate that law, there is a consequence to it.
Representative Atkins.
Now you're done? All right, Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, I support the law. At no time have I said I don't support the law. There is a consequence. There's currently a fine. There's penalties. What Representative Mazerall is trying to do is increase that penalty. I've never said undo the law. I support it. But should the penalty be the kind of thing where a person pays with the loss of a limb? Is that what we've come to? Is that how beholden we are to the insurance industry that we want to punish people to that degree? Mr. Chair, I'd appreciate a roll call on the amendment, please.
Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've got a question for Mr. Pender. Could you please reread the amendment, the wording of the amendment?
Mr. Pender.
Mr. Chair and Representative Davids, Representative Atkins has the amendment. I didn't write it. I didn't write it down when he read it, so I think he would have to read it.
Mr. Chair, Representative Atkins, could you just please repeat that?
Sure. Representative Atkins.
Mr. Chair, Representative Davids, it says it would be on line 2.27. Section G, paragraph D, applies only to individuals who intentionally fail to pay their auto insurance premiums.
Representative Davids.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And to Mr. Pender, my question would be with the intentionally fail piece, who would determine what the intent was? I mean, would that have to go to a court or a judge or intentionally fail? Could you shed some light on that, please?
Mr. Pender.
Mr. Chair and Representative Davids, if the parties can't agree on whether there was intent or not, then it would could go to court or through arbitration or something, you know, mediation or something like that. But there'd have to be, if the two sides can't agree on whether there was intent, then there'd have to be some kind of decision-making process like that.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Pender, is this... Are there other areas in the statute where this is commonly written where you'd say intentionally fail to? Is that commonplace or is seems kind of different to me?
Mr. Pender.
Mr. Chair and Representative Davids, I think the word intentional appears quite often, especially in criminal laws where you could be doing something. It might be a crime if you intended it, but not if it was, you know, not if it was an accident. And so there are, you know, there are places in the law where we have the consequences being different depending upon whether somebody intended to do it or not. But as you say, I mean, it's kind of a state of mind. So it's people other than the person who either intended or didn't intend are going to have to make the decision on whether they think the person intended or didn't intend to do something.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. If you look on the bill on lines 2.14 and 2.25, you'll see the reference to 169A.20. And I think what the word that you're probably looking for is knowingly fails to pay. And if you look at what would have to be proved under this, and I have 169A.20 in front of me, as it relates to hazardous substance, you have to be convicted of knowingly being under the influence of a hazardous substance. So you can inadvertently be under the influence of a hazardous substance. They have to prove actual knowledge that I knew this impaired me. That's the law that I would have to prove under this right now, under 169A.20. So I think the terminology you're maybe looking for is knowingly fails. That's the terminology that's in the bill right now through the statutory reference. For me to prove that violation, have to prove that knowledge, just like you'd have to prove knowledge of, under the amendment, knowledge of not paying your insurance. You take a situation like mine where they can't process my automatic payment. I didn't know that happened. I didn't know that I was defrauded. This would at least say I'd have to know. I'd have to be willful or reckless in not purchasing that insurance. I mean, if balance is what we're looking for, I think that that does strike some balance, and the courts deal with issues of knowledge and intent and reckless all the time.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Representative Mullery, did you still have a question to this point or to this amendment?
I did, and it...
If not, we can call on Representative Nelson.
I'll have to look through my notes. We can go to...
Okay. Does anyone else have questions to the amendment? Representative Atkins?
I'd prefer to have the word knowingly rather than intentionally. That was a good catch. It's a better fit for that. Thank you, Representative David.
Members have that change? Representative Sanders.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I do think knowingly is better than intentional. I guess one question trying to figure this out to the testifier, was your policy ever canceled,
Mr. Carlson,
while you're defrauded?
Mr. Chairman and members, in my situation, no. We're dealing with hypotheticals here, whether it's Millie or identity theft, or the teenager whose parent forgets to send in the policy, or the husband who forgets to drop the envelope in the mail. So those are all hypotheticals. And in my situation, no. But I have time now where I can go and redo all my routing numbers, redo all my bank accounts, because that's what you have to go through. And if that happens during a time when that, when my AAA insurance is supposed to swipe my account and debit that payment, my insurance is going to terminate. And they're going to argue over whether or not I know or did I do it. I mean, you know, the underlying problem with no pay, no play is that it absolutely removes fault of the accident away from the equation, and that's our concern with it.
Representative Sanders.
Mr. Carlson, in the state of Minnesota, as far as I'm aware, and I haven't had my producer license for a while now, but your insurance policy isn't terminated because of one lapse payment. You are notified several times, which is why I think the word knowingly is important. And most every hypothetical situation you just mentioned doesn't apply, because you would be notified in many different ways that your policy would be or is in a state of or a direction of being canceled. In fact, most of the times the companies will say if you remit payment, your policy will be in reinstated as if there never was a lapse. There would be no lapse in coverage. So I guess if we're going to use hypotheticals, let's make sure they're correct. I guess not necessarily sure exactly how the amendment will go, but knowingly is a much better term because it does, I'll just leave it at that, your policy doesn't terminate with a lapse in payment due to whatever reason initially. You would have to knowingly not pay and make that decision in order for your policy to terminate.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Carlson?
I don't believe that that's how the language of the bill would operate, because I would be operating that vehicle at the time of the accident without a valid policy of insurance in effect, even though it was lapsed. That is not in effect. And so that's one of the problems that we have with the bill.
Representative Sanders.
Mr. Carlson, again, that's incorrect. Just because your policy may not be paid up, your policy is in force until it's canceled. So that's just not correct.
Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To Mr. Carlson, I don't know if Mr. Carlson heard me, the questions I had earlier to Mr. Pender, and I'm getting some conflicting messages here, because if Millie's car is at the stoplight, she's 72 years old, she gets her car gets rear-ended, the other person's at fault. Mr. Pender said that Millie would still be covered under the bodily injury coverage for her injuries, which is actually, in most cases, better than the PIP coverage. You're saying that this bill would not allow Millie to be reimbursed by the person who's at fault?
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Davids, as I understood the hypothetical, I understood Millie to not have wage loss, not have and have $25,000 of medicals. Those would be reimbursed. However, if her policy was lapsed, not enforced, for whatever reason, she would not be entitled to pain, suffering, inconvenience, physical impairment, disfigurement, or other non-money damages.
Well, Representative Davids.
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Pender, is that correct? If the other person's fault, wouldn't you go under bodily injury coverage and those things would still be covered, or did I misunderstand that?
Mr. Pender.
Mr. Chair and Representative Davids, the way Mr. Carlson described it is correct, that she would not be able to recover for non-economic damages, which she would otherwise be able to sue the other driver for, but she would still be getting her own medical and other out-of-pocket costs under no-fault benefits from the insurance policy of the other driver or some other driver that's involved in the accident.
Well, Mr.
Representative,
Chairman, Mr. Pender, if she didn't have insurance, she wouldn't have PIP. Then could she, since she should be going to her policy, then she could collect off the other driver's PIP and BI for health care costs?
Mr. Pender.
Mr. Chair and Representative Davids, that's correct. That the way the no-fault system works is that if the injured person doesn't have coverage for some reason, that they can go against the no-fault coverage of any other vehicle that's involved in the accident. And that could be, for instance, if a person's a pedestrian, for instance, at the time, and they could collect under one of the other policies that's involved in the accident.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you, Representative Davids. Representative Mazerall, do you want to say anything about the amendment before we give the final word on the amendment to Representative Atkins?
I guess the only other point I'd like to make, and this gets back to some of Representative Slocum's comments, is that my understanding is that every year when we renew our tabs, we do make an assertion. It's a self-certification, but an assertion that we do carry the auto insurance required. in order to operate a vehicle in the state of Minnesota. So at least annually, that is something that a person intentionally or knowingly would have to check yes if they're doing it online or at the counter in order to get their tabs.
Thank you, Representative Mazzarol. Representative Atkins, do you want to have the final word before we vote?
Yeah, only about 10 words. I think this is what Representative Mazzarol indicated he wanted to do, was get after those people who deliberately aren't paying their insurance, and I think it's an improvement of the bill. I'd appreciate a yes vote.
Roll call having been requested, the clerk will take the roll.
Hoppe?
No.
Sanders?
Yes.
Atkins?
Yes.
Diane Anderson?
No.
Sarah Anderson?
No.
Anzels?
Yes.
Crawford?
No.
Doubt?
No.
Davids?
No.
Dietrich?
Yes.
Johnson?
Yes.
Kiefer?
No.
Lilly?
Yes.
Loon?
No.
Mazzarol?
No.
Mullery?
Aye.
Murdoch?
No.
Nelson?
Yes.
O'Driscoll?
Yes.
Slocum?
Yes.
Stensrud?
No.
Tilbury.
By a tie vote of 11 to 11, the motion does not prevail. On to the bill. Any final questions on the bill?
Chairman?
Representative Anzels.
I think we can all agree that hypotheticals should be correct, and I think claims that are made with regard to sensitive matters such as this should be verifiable and should have data to support the claim. And the claim has been made that people are avoiding paying insurance, driving automobiles. And these are people that are of the means to which they can afford to pay for that insurance. If hypotheticals need to be substantiated, so do claims. And lastly, in response to a question, I believe the author was asked, will there be any change in premiums for Minnesota drivers, and the answer was no. So why do this? This is unnecessary. Please vote no.
Representative Mullery.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Mazzarol, I think, unfortunately, you made the wrong decision when you were asked the question by a guy named Dan a long time ago and went the wrong way. But I guess it seems to me like maybe before voting on some of these kind of bills, we should have a basic course in the legal system and the difference between the tort system and the criminal system. And Mr. Carlson pointed out fault is the whole basis of the tort system. Crime is the basis of the criminal system. And that seems to be just flying away in this bill and the whole discussion of it. In the criminal system, you can target a penalty directly to the fault, the circumstances, and everything. Oh, and by the way, I hope I get accused sometime of being too weak on crime, because every campaign I have a piece of literature against me that I'm too tough on crime. So it'd be good to have a quote. But here's a circumstance, and it's not just Millie that might have forgotten to do this, but I'm not condoning, you know, driving after alcohol, but I'm going to talk about a real factual situation. And I think her name was Nancy. I can't remember for sure. Her husband died. She had three kids. She was driving, and I remember that there was some empty beer can or two in her car.
She was waiting at the stoplight down for Shepherd Road on Chestnut. A semi came along too fast on Warner Road, missed the turn, and ran right over her. So now, because she died, we couldn't convict her. But let's say she had lived and been a quadriplegic, a vegetable. The fact that she had maybe an 08 reading is going to mean that those kids get almost nothing for the loss of their mother. That's what you're doing on this, what I consider a really absurd bill. And I think if you don't understand that, I know it. I knew the kids, and this is sad.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess I got a question of Representative Mazzarol. Under your bill right now, using the example of Millie, driving without insurance, getting hit, getting medical, needing medical treatment, the insurance company's not going to pay for it. Who's going to pay for that medical insurance? Isn't she going to end up in the hospital on state care? So are we not just shifting the cost of her medical insurance or her medical care from the insurance company, her car insurance company, or the person who hit her car insurance company, to the state and to everybody else, the taxpayer?
Representative Mazzarol.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, my understanding of the operation of no-fault insurance is that even though she may not have insurance herself, the insurance of the driver of the other car would pay for that, partially for the no-fault portion, and even for the liability portion, up to the amount of her economic damages, which would be her medical bills.
Representative Nelson?
And just to go on with the Millie case, I mean, I know it's a hypothetical that Representative Atkins brought up, but my aunt, when she was in her 90s, it wasn't her car insurance because she wasn't driving at that time, but this goes to what Representative Sanders said, you get plenty of notices. Her house and home insurance, who she had had with her carrier for almost 60 years on her house, she missed the payment, thought she had paid it, and no one contacted her, no one got a hold of her. A year later, my mother found this, and I'm sure if Representative Davids was her agent that he would have come out and reminded her, but nobody contacted her, and it just happened to be a happenstance that we found out that she didn't have insurance. The only reason the company agreed to take the insurance back up was because she had just had a new roof put on the house. But otherwise, she would have been uninsured, and if something had happened to her, it would have been a total loss. And again, this stuff happens. It's not hypotheticals. We're talking elderly patients, and so elderly drivers that sometimes get confused. So we, like I said, the amendment we should have put on, but with the way the bill is, I can't support it, and I'm going to vote no.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Mullery.
Roll call on this.
I don't think we've heard a request for a roll call yet. Representative Tilbury.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I have a question for Representative Mazzarol. You were asked earlier how much the consumers would save, and the answer to the question was I don't know. That's what you'd said. So then I thought, well, maybe there's a different angle to ask the question. How much less would the cost be for the insurance companies because of this bill?
Representative Mazzarol. And Representative Mazzarol, do you want Mr. Johnson back up here to speak for the insurance companies?
Mr. Chair, Representative Tilbury, that would be, I think, a good idea to get someone who may have those an answer to the question.
Because, Mr. Chair, I would think that actuarial studies and all that, hypotheticals, insurance companies do that all the time. I would think they'd have the answer.
Mr. Johnson, do you want to come down and enlighten us?
And Mr. Chairman, before I leave, can I just close the loop with Representative Nelson on the cost shift? Because, well, in theory, it's right that the other driver would pay those medical benefits, That assumes that Millie would bring a claim against the other driver to have those costs reimbursed to her. Okay? It's not automatic. This is a liability case against a negligent driver. Without the ability to recover your non-economic losses, and the only thing the lawyer would be pursuing is the ability to pay the state back for their medical care, and Millie gets nothing out of that, I assure you that cost shift is not going to be corrected, because no one will take that case. No one. And so there is a significant cost shift to the state or the taxpayers when those, or to a private paid employer health plan, because there is no one that will take that case simply to recover already expended medical benefits on behalf of a driver when there is nothing left for them at the end of the day. So, well, in theory, yes, they could get reimbursed. In practicality, that would never happen because there is no benefit to Millie in doing that.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, on the specific question about what, how would insurers treat any dollar amounts that aren't paid out, because that's as a result of the bill. Here, the description.
Mr. Chair, I guess that you kind of changed the question, but I guess the question that I had was the benefit that the insurance company would get. What would that lessen the cost for the insurance company?
Okay. Mr. Johnson.
Yeah, Mr.
And
Chairman.
I would assume that you'd be able to come up with numbers to that.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, every insurance company licensed in selling auto insurance in the state is required to file the rates, whatever they're charging for auto insurance. And those rate filings are comprised statistically of all of the data, what they've paid in claims. So this is not, we know this information. And so to what any law, whether it's House File 730 or any other bill that impacts what those dollar payments are, each company is required to file, you know, collectively that data. They'll add on their overhead costs and agent commissions. And that's the basis of the rates they charge. So if their losses go down, then their rate filing has to include that data. So my point and comment is this, Mr. Chairman and committee members, is that the any impact on the dollars paid out by any licensed auto insurer will be reflected. Now there's other, a lot of pieces that are coming together in that rate filing, but they have to base their rates on what they're paying out in Minnesota. And so consumers, if you will, anyone buying those products will see the impact of that in the rates that are charged.
Representative Tilbury. To that. Well, then I guess the question then goes back to how much would the consumers save? And it couldn't be an I don't know. It could be a range of numbers or something. I would think that would be something you could answer.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Johnson.
And in my comments, we're not supporting House File 730 saying it's going to have X percent impact, because we don't know in terms of how many cases are going to hit the courts where this is going to become operational. Mm-hmm. And without knowing that, you really can't project what that is, because we don't know what that's going to be. So we're not presenting this bill saying it's going to do X percent to consumers. Whatever it does will be reflected in the premiums that auto insurers charge in the state. I think that's, I assume, the concern is that to whatever extent this affects system costs, the consumers will see that. And that's how the system operates, and I can assure you and the committee members, that's how it will operate. And I don't have a number today to say what it is, because I don't know how many lawsuits are going to be impacted. We simply don't know that. I think that's an honest answer. We're being straightforward about that, and the reasons why we think it's an appropriate public policy step to put this in place.
You good?
Just one more comment.
Representative Filbert.
Mr. Chair, I guess with the companies that deal with actuarial studies and predictions and things that don't happen, or they're not sure what happens, but boy, they can come up with pretty good figures. I guess I'd be interested to see if you could come up with some kind of figure based on this bill and provide it.
Mr. Johnson, we'd be happy to see anything you can come up with. I think it would be interesting to all of us to see what this would do to premiums.
Sure. Well, Mr. Chairman, I think that, as has been commented, that there are, in our own state government, has fully qualified actuaries that do the same kind of work that the actuaries for the private sector do. So I think it would be a matter of kind of, you'd have to put together a series of hypotheticals or scenarios and what number of cases, so we could probably construct some modeling that would say if X number of people filed suits and they had these kinds of dollar impacts. So, I mean, it would be possible to do that, but they would be hypotheticals or projections or kind of guesstimates about what might happen under the law. Mr. Chairman, I think something like that could be done. I don't have that here today, but we would be happy to talk to the people that do the number crunching and see what kind of modeling we could do.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is this going to public safety?
That's what the motion is. That's where it's scheduled to go.
And then to Mr. Johnson, with respect to the $600 fine, once again, you spoke to the fact you have some documentation that higher fine is an effective promoter of people getting insurance. I have my doubts on that. It seems like it'd be at least with the people I worked with in adult probation, it gets them in this vicious cycle of not being able to purchase things because they're behind on the fines and so forth. But prior to public safety hearing, if you could get us that documentation, I know there's at least three of us on this committee who'll be there beforehand, so we could take a look at it, man, because that's the issue we'll be addressing there. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. Seeing no further questions, we'll go to Representative Karnak.
Oh, Representative Karnak is. Although Karnak, oh, did I mess it up? Oh, okay.
And just when we thought you were all knowing and all seeing.
There. Karnak is for the next bill, but I am kind of shambling. But as long as we got it there. Representative Pender, I think that's a demotion, Mr. Pender. Mr. Pender, we deal in hypotheticals all the time because that's how laws work, and we have to talk about how a law may impact people. But this wouldn't apply, for example, if you have, let's use me. If I get in a crash and I'm not insured and I'm killed, my family still would be able to recover under this bill for their losses, pain, suffering, loss of consortium, that sort of thing. Is that right? They didn't fail to pay their insurance. Am I reading this correctly?
Mr. Pender.
You may not like me, but my kids are really nice, and they'd still have a claim, right?
Mr. Chair and Representative Atkins, I'm not sure the wording of the bill is clear on this. And in line 2.13, it talks about the injured person. But then up in line 2.10, it says a person shall not recover non-economic losses, etc. And I think it'd be possible to argue that a person extends not just to the person that was injured, but to another person, like a surviving family member, who'd be able to make a claim like this.
Representative Atkins.
Exactly, Mr. Pender. We're ready to vote.
Seeing no further questions, Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I've held my tongue during this discussion, and there's been some good examples brought up of tragic situations. But, you know, representatives, at some point, people have to stand up for the rule followers and the bill payers in this society. If it is illegal not to drive without insurance, and you have a family at home that values your life and that coverage, then perhaps one ought to think about that as a responsible parent and a responsible citizen. Members, we can come up with all kinds of very sad scenarios where people did things that were very unfortunate. But at some point, if it is the law, you need to have consequences for breaking that law. And thank you, Representative Mazurall, for standing up for people who are following the law.
Representative Mazurall, we'll give you the final word.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. You know, one thing we don't want to lose here is that operating a motor vehicle is a very dangerous activity and potentially fatal. And when Minnesotans take it upon themselves to operate a 3,000-pound piece of equipment, and the state gives them a license to do so, and they're on the roads doing that, endangering others, what we say is their responsibility to carry insurance in order to cover any potential damages, losses to others or to themselves in the event of an accident. What this bill does and what it says is that we do not allow persons who are engaged in such activity not being responsible by not carrying insurance to recover anything beyond their actual out-of-pocket economic detriment. They still are receiving what their actual loss is. Now, there are certainly some egregious sort of circumstances, and I think we all can sympathize with people who are in those situations. However, this is an activity that a person undertakes knowingly, undertakes a privilege that the state gives to them, and does it without responsibility, and it holds them unable to recover beyond those economic damages. So, Mr. Chair, I renew my motion to recommend to pass House File 730 and re-refer that to Public Safety Committee.
Very good. Thank you, Representative Mazerall. Roll call having been requested, the clerk will take the roll.
Hoppe.
Aye.
Sanders.
Yes.
Adkins.
Nope.
Diane Anderson.
Yes.
Sarah Anderson.
Yes.
Anzels.
Nope.
Crawford.
Yes.
Doubt.
Yes.
Davids.
Yes.
Dietrich.
Yes.
Johnson.
Nope.
Kiefer.
Yes.
Lilly.
No.
Loon.
Yes.
Mazerall.
Yes.
Mullery.
No.
Murdoch.
Yes.
Nelson.
No.
O'Driscoll.
Yes.
Slocum.
No.
Stensrud.
Yes.
Tilbury.
No.
By a vote of 14-8, the motion does prevail. Thank you, Representative Mazerall. And members, as we look at our agenda, we didn't make it very far through today, but we had a lot of questions. We are an inquisitive group, as we've said. We originally were talking about potentially meeting later tonight. I think we are not going to do that, and we will meet tomorrow night at 5:15, and we will we can either take up this agenda. I think we already have a couple of other bills on tomorrow night's agenda. So depending on authors and committee members and testifiers, we will work on a new agenda for tomorrow night at 5:15. Thank you, members, for your attention and time. Have a good night. We are adjourned.